murmurs huskily, his voice coated with the most potent ambrosia. His pupils are dilated, his eyes almost black as he regards me with unfulfilled lust. My lips part as I find it harder and harder to breathe, my chest constricting, my entire body seemingly turning against me.
Oh, my darling girl, I know you feel it too. You might not know why, but you will always feel this magnetic pull towards me.
I swallow hard, unable to find an adequate reply because he is right. There are so many questions I need to ask him, so many things I still need clarified. Yet he only needs to look at me like that, like I'm the only one in the world for him, and I no longer care about anything else. Not that he is a wanted demon, nor that I am a born witch and we are on opposite sides. I don't care about anything but this moment when he is only a man and I am a woman.
You are the only one in the world for me.
He confesses thickly, and my eyes widen in realization. He's reading my mind, has been doing so from the very beginning.
And I swear to you, Lizzie mine, on my never-ending life and on my damned soul, I swear to you that my desire for you is not conditional on the mark you bear. The only condition is you, past, present, future, always you.
He draws before his lips cover mine in a bruising kiss. My hands go to his shoulders to push him off, yet instead my fingers get tangled in his thick hair, pressing my lips tighter against his.
Let me in, Lizzie.
He rasps against my mouth.
Let me taste home again, my love.
He says as he nibbles at my lips, slowly and expertly coaxing them open. His words barely register. I'm too lost to sensation, to the feel of his mouth opening on top of mine, urging me to do the same. My lips slowly part, enough for him to swipe his tongue against the seam of my mouth, seeking entrance. I don't question it. I don't wonder what this madness is that has taken over me as I open deeper, letting him in just as I meet his tongue with mine. A loud moan escapes me as my back hits the wall once more, his knees between my legs, rubbing me intimately, just as he continues to stroke my naked breast, his thumb circling my nipple before pinching it.
Fuck.
He curses as he angles my head so he can taste me deeper, probe me more intimately, feel me closer to his body just as I feel him to mine. Amen, I gasp, the word wrenched from my lips. My Amen, I murmur incoherently as our mouths fuse to one another.
That's it, Lizzie mine.
He groans, sharp teeth pricking at my lower lip and drawing blood. The pain is but a light pulsation compared to the pleasure of his embrace. The kiss becomes increasingly heated. One hand continues to knead my breast, while his other massages my nape, seducing me into surrendering to him. It's a maddening dichotomy how he plunders what is freely given. Yet, just as I think I'm going to die if I don't feel his naked skin on mine, he's off me at the other end of the room.
I'm sorry.
He breathes harshly.
Thought I could control myself.
He swallows hard, his eyes glowing a deep red in the dimly lit room.
But you're not ready for me.
I'm slow to react, the fog of desire still clouding my mind. What if I am? I bite my lip as I lower my torn gown to my waist in a daring gesture. His heated gaze dips to my naked breasts, pure hunger radiating from him.
I fuck hard, sweetheart.
He says darkly, his eyes never once leaving my chest.
You're not ready for me yet.
And with that, he's gone, disappearing into thin air. My breath catches in my throat as I stare at the spot he just vacated, and a deep flush envelops my body.
I fuck hard, sweetheart.
Why do his vulgar words only whet my appetite for more? Lord Berkeley doesn't come the following day, to my mother's great chagrin. And though I'm happy about it, I can't help but think that Eamon might have had something to do with it. He hadn't been pleased to find out I danced with Viscount Berkeley. I can't imagine how he would have reacted to us spending more time together. Though I hadn't asked Eamon any of the pending questions I have, I feel eerily calm about what happened last night. Calm and embarrassed. My cheeks burn once more, for the thousandth time today when I think about his kiss, the taste of him and how his mouth had fitted on top of mine. It had been pure wonder, so much so that I don't understand why he'd stopped when he had. He must have known he could have taken me right then and there, and I wouldn't have protested. It might have been wrong of me to do so, but when I'm in his vicinity, all rational thoughts flee me until he's all I can think about. Eamon. My Eamon. I spend the rest of the day with a perpetual smile on my face, waiting for night to come, for my Eamon to visit me again. Except when midnight strikes, he is nowhere to be found. There's only one small note.
Wait for me, Lizzie mine. I will soon have all the answers you seek. Yours eternally, Eamon.
How dare he? I blink as I read it again, and again. I read it until all the anger and frustration I'd held at bay simply explodes inside me. Crumpling the sheet of paper, I throw it into the fireplace. My breathing is labored as I watch the flames envelop it, so much so that I can barely calm myself down. How dare he? He comes into my life when it's convenient for him to do so, and he easily leaves me when it's not. How can he ask me to wait for him when all I've done so far has been waiting? Waiting and with nothing to show for it. I've given him the benefit of the doubt against my own family's words. I mourned him when I thought he was lost to me. I was ready to lose myself, too. And what does he do? He just asks me to wait. But how can I, when it seems he's playing with my emotions, when he treats me like a mere stop instead of a destination? Damn you, Eamon! I rage out loud, hoping his supernatural senses pick up on it so he will realize I'm not his plaything. That night, in a moment of pure anger, I take out one of my mother's books and draw protective runes all over my walls and on the windowsill, ensuring that if Eamon wants to come in, he will not be able to. Maybe this will teach him a lesson. Days pass, and though my anger at him continues, it slowly loses momentum. It's especially hard to keep it going when it morphs into longing. Why do I have to be so simplistic? Why does Eamon have to inspire only one type emotions in me? Longing, lust, love? Even knowing he's a demon, that he's the definition of evil, my soul cannot stop yearning for him. In an attempt to forget my situation with Eamon, I dedicate more time to my friendship with Emma. We go out shopping for books together, and we spend the afternoon alternately at each other's houses. My mother's pleased about our connection, but she is still a little put off about my lack of suitors, which has been even more pronounced lately. Though in the beginning I would receive some invitations to dance, or for a ride in Hyde Park, now there's absolutely nothing. Before, I was the one refusing all invites. Now, they just never come. You must have done something.
My mother snaps at me one morning. But I can't imagine what. You have a pleasant face and figure, and I've bought you the best gowns and jewelry money could buy. By all intents and purposes, you should have been declared the incomparable of the season. A diamond of the first water. But instead of that, everyone avoids you. No gentleman would look twice at you. For God's sake, your dowry alone should have those fools running. I shrug. Maybe I'm just not a great conversationalist, Mama. I tried to talk with Lord Berkeley about his horses, but I fear he saw right through me. I'm sorry I can't pretend. I give her a false apology. Her lips flatten into a disapproving line.
Why couldn't you be more like your sister?
She huffs in a low tone. I frown at the veiled insult. What is that supposed to mean? How should I be more like Olivia?
Never mind.
Fiona waves her hand dismissively, but I'm not about to let it go. Not when seemingly my entire life I've been somehow less than Olivia. No, please do tell me, Mother. How should I be more like Olivia? Is it because she married when she was supposed to? That she was the perfect child and she never made any problems for you? Or... I pause, raising a brow. Is it because she's your successor, where I lack the power to do anything but the most basic spell? Her eyes widen, and as she opens her mouth to speak, no words come out.
Do I come across like that?
She asks softly a moment later. I blink in surprise at the shift. Yes, you do. She purses her lips.
It wasn't my intention.
She releases a deep sigh.
I've never been as protective of Olivia as I am of you, because I know how special you are. I need to know you are safe. And if that means finding you a husband, then I'm going to find you a husband, even if it's the last thing I'll do.
But why do you need to go to that extreme? Why would a husband help me in any way?
Because,
she starts, looking around to make sure there's no one in our vicinity.
That mark of yours emits pulsations, just like a beacon. Since I bound your powers when you were born, the pulsations became so faint, most wouldn't be able to detect them. But a powerful enough demon could. So the only way for you to be safe, truly safe, is to eliminate the last traces of your mark.
How? Her cheeks redden slightly.
You'll need to marry,
she starts, and you'll need to consummate the marriage. She clears her throat.
Once you take your husband's seed, the last echoes of the pulsation should slowly ebb until they disappear.
I see. I murmur as I direct my gaze to my food. Why didn't you want me to marry Lord Clifford? It could have solved your issues.
How do you know about Lord Clifford?
She frowns.
Never mind. It must be that habit of yours to listen at closed doors. Lord Clifford was a bad man, Elizabeth. I don't want you to marry just anyone. I do want you to be happy, though we must hurry the process a little now.
She gives me a tight smile. I nod, forcing myself to return her smile. Yet all the while, Eamon's words are echoing in my mind.
It's irreversible.
Even if the mark still emitted pulsations, why would my mother go to such lengths if she knew the binding spell she'd put on me was irreversible, that I could never tap into the powers offered by that mark? The only alternative is that she wants to keep me safe, that there is still the possibility that I could be killed if one of those hungry demons got their hands on me. Yet why do I feel like there's more to this? Why do I feel like neither Eamon nor my mother are telling me the entire story? Just as she gets up from the table, I remember to ask her something. May I spend the weekend at Emma's house? She was here last time, and now she has invited me over. I'd love to spend more time with her.
Of course you may. I had tea with her mother the other day, and she asked me for permission, which I've already granted. I'm sad nothing came of you and Lord Berkeley, but they are wonderful people.
Thanking her, I head upstairs to prepare while Mary packs me a small bag. Though my mother had been put off in the beginning because Lord Berkeley hadn't called on us, she'd quickly gotten over it when she'd heard he'd taken ill. By the time he'd recovered, he'd been called to his country seat, and nothing more had come of that promise. Once more I find my thoughts drifting to Aemon, as they usually do whenever I think about myself and a man in the same sentence. It's almost like he'd laid siege to my thoughts. Or maybe he did. If that demon can read my mind, then who knows what else he can do? And yet, the one thing he does not do is honor his promise to me. My anger at him might have dwindled over the last few weeks, but that doesn't mean he's off the hook once he shows up. In fact, I've already compiled a list of questions I need answers to, a list that seemingly grows every day. Besides being curious about him and his origins, I also want to know why he's so keen on me if not for the mark. Despite my mother's praises, I know I am not the best-looking girl out there, nor am I the best-mannered, smartest, or possessing of an even temper. If I were to describe myself, I would say I am just above average. Not quite average, but a little bit over. My mother was right in one regard, though. With my dowry, everyone should have been vying for my hand. Yet I have absolutely no suitors, not even fortune hunters. It's so strange that I am sure a certain demon must have had something to do with it. Shaking my head as I try to thrust Aemon out of my mind once more, I finish getting ready before boarding a carriage with my luggage and going to Emma's house in Grosvenor Square. "I'm so happy you're here! We're going to have such a wonderful time together," Emma declares, as I'm led to my room across from hers. "Me too. Soon, when you're married, it's going to be much harder to see each other. I'm happy my mother allowed me to come." "I think she can see how unhappy you are." She purses her lips. Waiting for the footman to leave, I plop myself on the bed, releasing a loud, tired sigh. "Can she? I know she has my best interests at heart. It's just..." I trail off, not knowing how much I can share. It is true that Emma and I have become the closest of friends, the likes I'd never had before, but how much could I share with her considering my family's secretive background? For that reason, I hadn't dared mention Aemon, though she'd shrewdly intuited that I am mooning after a gentleman. "She wants you to make a good match," Emma says, taking a seat next to me and taking my hands in hers. "She wants me to make any match at this point, and I bite my lip. I'm in love with someone already." "What?" she squeaks. "I cannot believe this. You must tell me everything," she says as she goes to the door, closing it and ensuring no one is around to eavesdrop. "There isn't much to say." I shrug. He's not someone my mother would ever approve of, so I am bound to just love him from afar. "Does he love you back?" she asks excitedly, seemingly overlooking the fact that I told her it's a forbidden match. "I'm not sure," I admit, my smile falling. "He's never said so, though his actions suggest he might have a tender for me." Despite never saying it out loud, Aemon had mentioned the word love in his letters, but considering I'm not sure about anything where he is concerned, I could never confidently say he loves me. "Dear God, Elizabeth, tell me you haven't done anything." She pauses, her voice dropping. "Scandalous." She utters the word in a hushed tone. A blush envelops my features as I think of our kiss and his heated touches. He'd made my body sing to life in a way I would have never imagined. He'd built me up to a crescendo, but he'd never quite fulfilled the promise of pleasure as he'd drawn back.
"I fuck hard, sweetheart."
"You have," Emma accuses lightly. I wave my hands in front of me, too red and embarrassed to come up with a witty reply. "Only a kiss," I whisper when I'm finally able to speak. Her brows shoot up, and her cheeks flush red too. "My God!" I point at her. "You too! You and Lord Folly!" Her reaction gives her away immediately as she looks away. "He kissed me," she murmurs. "And a little more," she says before she throws herself on the bed, burying her head in a pillow. "What more?" I whisper, full of curiosity. She burrows harder into the pillow, letting out a small squeal. When she manages to calm down, she gives me a very brief description of what had happened between her and Lord Folly. He'd been calling on her, and her mother, who had been chaperoning them, had been suddenly called away. By that point, he'd already kissed her, but this time he did something more with his fingers. Emma doesn't know exactly how to explain what happened, but she tells me his touch gave her great pleasure without taking her virtue. I nod along, fascinated by what she's telling me as I do my best to imagine Eamon and I in the same circumstances. Everything he'd done to me had felt pleasurable, including his slight bite. The rest of the day passes in a flurry as we entertain ourselves talking about our beaus. Well, at night we sneak to a room to read passages from a novel by Anne Radcliffe that Emma had managed to secretly procure. Since reading frivolities is frowned upon, neither her parents nor my mother would ever allow us to read such a novel. But as we delve deeper into the story, we cannot help but root for the heroine to escape her fate and succeed in her quest for love. By the time we turn the last page of the novel, it's already late at night. Emma is snoring softly on the bed, and I know she'll want to reread the ending again when she wakes up. Unlike her, I'm not in the least sleepy. The candles are still burning, and measuring how much time I have left, I decide to get another book from the library. Slowly getting out of bed, I grab a shawl that I wrap around my shoulders since the hallways are a little chilly, and I make my way out of the room. Since it's Saturday night, Emma's mother is away at a ball, and with the servants already asleep, the house is eerily quiet. Holding on to a small candle, I creep my way down the stairs to the ground floor where the library is located. Mayhap something boring would help me fall asleep. God knows since Eamon's last visit I haven't been able to sleep properly. No matter how much I try to put him out of my mind, my traitorous heart would not give up hope. Reaching the library, I slowly turn the knob and push the door open. Immediately, light floods my eyes from the inside, and it takes me a few moments to get used to it. Blinking, I bring the back of my hand to my eyes, rubbing softly before opening them and coming face to face with Lord Berkeley and three of his friends.
"Elizabeth?"
He calls me by my given name, making me realize the impropriety of this. "I'm so sorry. I didn't know anyone was here. I'll leave you to it," I say as I turn to leave.
"Wait,"
Viscount Berkeley calls out.
"You must have come here for a book. You should get one."
He nods to the bookshelves behind him. Swallowing hard, I look from him to his friends, who are eyeing me suspiciously, and I don't know whether it's worth the trouble. "Thank you, but I'll just get one tomorrow. It's already too late," I murmur.
"Nonsense. Please don't let our presence dissuade you from getting a book. I would feel like a bounder if I inconvenienced you in any way,"
he adds, giving me a sincere smile. I falter. "I'll just take one book and then I'll be on my way," I nod at him, scurrying towards the back of the room. I already know what I want since I'd perused the shelves quite thoroughly early in the day. Heading to the classics section, I pick Plato's Republic, hugging it to my chest as I turn to leave. I give them a small smile as I make my way to the door. One of Lord Berkeley's friends is by the door, and he moves aside as I reach for the knob, only to realize it's not budging. The door is locked. I whip my head back to Lord Berkeley. "This isn't amusing, my lord. Please open the door," I say through gritted teeth.
"Why are you in such a hurry, Elizabeth? Spend some time with us,"
he adds mockingly. Too late do I notice the dangerous glint in his eyes as he looks me up and down, his lips curling. His other friends share the same look, a couple chuckling at my expense. "It's not proper. Please open the door," I repeat, My hand is still on the knob as I try to rattle the door open.
Is this what you want?
Lord Berkeley asks as his friend throws him the key. Lifting it in his hand, he waves it at me. Please open the door. I push my chin up.
I'll give you the key in exchange for something.
He continues, as if he doesn't hear my repeated pleas. Yet I don't give him the satisfaction of asking in exchange for what. A hole develops in the pit of my stomach as I realize I stepped into danger due to my own stupidity. The moment I saw four men alone at night, I should have just turned and left. Please open the door. I maintain my stance, looking him in the eye so he can see he won't be able to bully me.
Give me a kiss, and I will.
He drawls. One of his friends starts whistling while the others crack some lewd jokes at my expense. This isn't proper, my lord, I tell him again, yet this time I can't imbue my words with the same firmness as fear starts to take shape within me.
One kiss, Elizabeth. At least that's what I'm owed after what happened because of you.
I frown. I don't know what you're talking about. It's at that moment that I realize he's only been showing me half his face. Slowly, he turns, showing me the side bathed in the shadows. A gasp escapes me as I see the mottled red flesh on half his cheek. What? Emma hadn't said anything about her brother suffering such an injury. She'd just told me he'd taken ill and had decided to retire to his country seat to recuperate.
It disgusts you, doesn't it?
He snarls, coming closer. With every step he takes, I can see that the injury is likely the result of a hot iron being embedded in his flesh. It's a fairly recent wound, too, going by the angry red hue of the area. I'm so sorry that happened to you, my lord. But how could it have been my fault? I did not even know you were injured. I sputter in indignation. How dare he blame me for his injury?
Not your fault.
He releases a dry laugh before his features turn to granite.
Hold her.
He nods to his friend. Before I can move, strong arms take hold of me, dragging me from the door. He removes my candle from my grasp, throwing my book and shawl to the ground as he presents me to Lord Berkeley.
Not your fault,
he repeats as he comes in front of me, his hand curled around my throat. The other man is holding my arms captive behind my back. No matter how much I try to struggle, I cannot move an inch.
Guess what the person who did this to me told me?
He asks, his nostrils flaring in disgust as he peruses my face.
He told me to forget you ever existed, that this will be my mercy if I never come near you again.
My eyes widen in shock. Only one person could have done that. Aemon. Let me go! I kick at the other man. I had nothing to do with your injury. My lord, please let me go. This is improper. I level him with my stare. His lips twitch.
Hold her tighter,
he orders the other man just as he reaches for the hem of my dress. What are you doing? I cry out as I kick my legs, trying to get him away from me. Yet all it does is enrage him. Before I know what's happening, he swipes the back of his hand across my cheek. The unexpected pain makes me reel, momentarily stunning me to the spot. He pulls at my nightgown, and it slowly dawns on me what he's trying to do, just as pure terror envelops me. Enough so that I utter only one word. Aemon, I whisper into the night, both a calling and a plea.
What? I didn't hear you, Lizzie.
Lord Berkeley chuckles, turning his burned cheek towards me.
But I did.
Another voice rings out in the library. Air whooshes around as Aemon stretches to his full height in the room, the ceiling seemingly barely able to contain him. The man holding me stumbles back in horror, just as Lord Berkeley turns.
Who the hell?
His words are cut off as his eyes widen in recognition.
You.
He points at Eamon.
It was you!
Eamon doesn't even blink at Lord Berkeley's incessant accusations. Setting his eyes on me, his eyes scan me from head to toe before he gives me a brief nod. At the same time, the man holding me is sent flying away, his back connecting with the wall behind.
What? What the hell? Terry, what's this?
The others start moving around, panic and fear lacing their voices as a cacophony of sounds engulfs the library. Eamon looks completely unbothered as he takes a step towards Lord Berkeley.
What were you going to do to her?
Eamon asks, raising a bored brow as he regards the Viscount.
Nothing.
He gulps down, looking at his friends, his gaze pleading for help.
You see, I think you're lying.
Eamon makes a tisk sound, and as he brings one finger against the Viscount's temple, tapping his skin lightly, Lord Berkeley opens his mouth and starts talking. It doesn't seem that he is in control of his words, as he explains in great detail what a bitch I am and how he would have derived great pleasure from defiling me. For the first time, a look of distaste crosses Eamon's face, and with a movement of his hand, the Viscount stops talking.
What about the rest of you?
He narrows his eyes at the other men. Before they can even blink, Eamon appears behind each of them, tapping their foreheads and forcing them to admit their most depraved thoughts. One by one, they admit they would have taken turns with me once Berkeley was done, and to hide the incident, they would have killed me and made it seem like an accident or a suicide. My lower lip trembles in distress as I realize how close I was to my death, and to something worse. A twitch appears in Eamon's cheek as he regards the men with a murderous expression. Yet his first target seems to be the Viscount. I'm frozen to the spot as I simply watch what's happening around me. I don't know if it's shock or morbid curiosity, but even if I wanted to, I could not move. Eamon stops in front of Lord Berkeley, and lifting his hand, he snaps his fingers in front of the Viscount. Immediately, the man's head explodes. I jump back as blood, bones, and brains splatter everywhere, including on my white nightgown. Eamon doesn't flinch, as blood splashes on his face, slowly dripping down. His eye color seemingly changes, but I can't be sure if it's not a play of shadows or simply my erroneous perception. The other men scream in terror as they try to run for the exit, but as Eamon turns his attention to them, they stop, as if they are no longer in control of their actions. With measured steps, Eamon walks towards them, stopping in front of the first man. I watch with trepidation as he extends his hand. Yet, just as I think he will make the man's head explode as well, he doesn't. Under my very gaze, Eamon's hand changes shape, morphing into something sharp, resembling a talon. One moment the blade glints in the dim lighting, the next it penetrates the man's chest. Everything happens in the blink of an eye. For a moment, his hand is inside the man's chest cavity. The next, he pulls it back, holding the man's still beating heart. One pump, two, blood gushes out. Closing his fist, the heart explodes, more blood bursting out, staining the ceiling and walls of the library, but also turning Eamon's white hair red. He looks terrifying, like a true apparition, like a demon. I gasp as he turns towards me, his lips pulling into a mocking smile. He gives me a knowing look, his eyes shifting from their normal light blue to blood red before they go pure black. Flinging the man's body aside with his finger, he turns to the next one. Two men are now left, both trembling from head to toe. Despite not being able to move, the first one pisses himself,
the entire front of his light-coloured trousers now wet. Eamon shakes his head in amusement as he seemingly ponders what he should do to them.
Lizzie mine,
he murmurs, tilting his head to look at me.
They were going to rape and kill you. What punishment do you think is fit for them?
Me? I croak, my voice breaking as I speak. From shock or from screaming earlier, I do not know.
Yes.
He nods.
Tell me, my love, what do you think they deserve?
I wet my lips, my limbs shaky, my heart in my throat as I take in the slaughter around me. I'm covered in human matter from head to toe, just like the entire room is stained red. It's a wonder I'm still on my feet, that I haven't swooned from the horror of it all. Yet, throughout everything, my awareness was sharp. I heard everything the men said, what they would do to me and how they would kill me. And why? All because of a lord's injured pride. I have never asked Eamon to act against Lord Berkeley, so why should I pay for sins that are not mine? As you see fit, I finally utter the words, lifting my chin up and looking Eamon right in the eye. His lips slowly curl up in pleasure as he tips his head at me. Without any preliminaries, he turns his attention to the two other men, appearing like a flash by their side and whispering something in their ear. Then he simply appears by my side, threading his fingers through mine. The man who'd pissed himself undoes the fastening of his pants, while the other man falls to his knees in front of him. Before I can see more, though, Eamon whirls me around, turning me towards him and away from what is happening behind me. "What did you make them do?" I whisper, slowly taking in his blood-streaked features and red hair. There's a savageness that clings to him, one that should disgust me. Instead, I only find myself more drawn to him and the pure violence that radiates from him.
Everything they meant to do to you, they will do to each other, with a small twist, of course.
He smirks, his tone playful. Blood trails down his cheek. Bringing my hand to his, I wipe it away with my thumb. But just as I'm about to move my hand, his fingers circle my wrist, keeping it in place. Screams echo in the room, and from the corner of my eye, I can see more blood splatter on the walls. It goes on for seconds on end, before suddenly everything is quiet. They are dead.
They are.
Eamon confirms, taking hold of my finger and bringing my thumb to his mouth. His lips part, slowly, as his tongue peeks out to lick the residue blood. I am too lost in the intensity of his eyes to move or say anything. They flicker again, the color changing to a myriad of different hues. He killed them. He killed four people. He slaughtered them. And I watched.
How does it feel, Lizzie mine?
He asks suavely, leaning forward until his lips are a mere breath away from mine.
How does it feel to see the true face of the devil?
He blinks, and his eyes become black, wholly black. Terrifying. The true Eamon is absolutely terrifying.
Chapter 15. Late September 1955, Fairydale, Massachusetts.
Bring me the alcohol!
Wait, she's coming around.
My eyes slowly open as the throbbing in my temple subsides. Blinking to gain some clarity, I note four figures hovering over me. The Hales, all but Caleb. Rhiannon is to my right, her features wrinkled with worry. Tomasa and Connor Hale are on the left side, a step away from Katrina, who's holding on to my hand.
You're awake, she breathes out in relief.
Everyone seemingly does the same as they see me slowly regain consciousness. Instinctively, my hand goes to my head where the throbbing had been, expecting to find an injury. Yet, there's nothing. What happened? I frown, having a hard time remembering how I'd ended up here. Rhiannon purses her lips.
We found you in the catacombs, Darcy. You fainted there,
she explains. My brows are scrunched together as I attempt to recall how I'd ended up there, my memory slowly coming back. Aemon. He was calling my name, was he not? I'd only followed his voice, and then... I shake my head in frustration at the huge blank in my mind. Instead of remembering how I'd ended up in the catacombs, I recall vividly the past. The Aemon from the past. Terrifying. A demon. An actual, honest-to-God, veritable demon. Who, besides spending his time slaughtering people and spreading evil wherever he went, also spent time romancing me. Or, rather, Elizabeth. That is a lot to wrap my mind around. Almost 200 years ago, I was in love with a demon, so much so that I didn't even care that he was the personification of evil. And then there's the matter of my former family of... witches. I wince as my temples throb anew, pain spreading through my body.
Are you all right, dear?
Rhiannon touches my hand, squeezing it lightly. Yes. I bite against the pain. I cannot remember well what happened.
That's fine. You don't need to strain yourself. But we will be sealing shut the door to the catacombs. It's very dangerous down there.
Dangerous how? I look at her, seeing the lines of worry still marring her face. But is this because of me, or is it something else?
There are radioactive materials there.
Connor steps forward.
They used our house to deposit shipments of uranium in the Second World War. It must have been the fumes that made you pass out. It's better for everyone if we close off that tunnel for good.
Rhiannon nods.
Here, have some tea. It should help with the pain.
She mentions as she brings me a tray from the desk, placing a cup of hot tea in my hands. Thank you. I give them a smile. For everything. And I'm sorry I went there without asking.
No harm done. You're fine, and that's all that matters.
Rhiannon waves her hand.
Why don't you join us for dinner tonight, if you feel up to it, that is. If not, I can ask to have your dinner sent to your room.
Dinner. I frown as I look at the mantel clock on the table at the end of the room. 3 in the afternoon. Good Lord, how long was I out? Dinner sounds perfect. Thank you so much. I force a smile, but as my mind slowly clears, more questions appear.
We'll leave you now if you're all right,
Tomasa asks, her eyes combing my body for any signs of distress. Yes, do not worry. I am quite fine, I assure them. One by one, they slowly leave my room. Only Rhiannon lingers behind, her lips flattened into a thin line as she regards me.
I think you and I are due for a talk, Darcy. I'm in the conservatory every morning until noon. Come by tomorrow.
She doesn't wait for my reply, the door closing after her. I wait for a few moments before I place the empty cup of tea on a nearby table. Getting out of bed, I jump to my feet, surprised there's no echo of pain. Checking the door to my room is locked, I head to the bathroom. Despite having my thoughts in disarray, I'm starting to gain more clarity, both about what had led me to the catacombs and about the vision I'd had about the past. At this point, I can no longer deny that those aren't dreams. They aren't something born out of my imagination. They are visions of a past life, one where I was Elizabeth Montford and hopelessly in love with a demon. I stop in front of the bathroom mirror, and tugging on the neckline of my gown, I push it low enough to reveal my birthmark. the same birthmark Elizabeth also had. My lips purse in concentration as I examine it thoroughly. About 2 inches big, it's a dark discoloration on my skin in the shape of a teardrop. According to Fiona Montford, this mark denotes a certain ability to heal. Information floods my brain, as do the implications of my visions. Am I somehow related to the Elizabeth of the past? Is this mark hereditary? Because that would make me a descendant of the Stuarts, too. In turn, that would mean I have witch blood running through my veins. Moving my gaze from my mark to the mirror, I examine my features. Not only do I have the same mark as Elizabeth, but we also look like twins. In my past life, Fiona had bound my powers so no one would take advantage of the mark. Has this happened in this life too? Yet the moment that question arises in my mind, I somehow doubt it. I may not remember much about my mother, but I am certain she'd never dabbled in witchcraft or anything pertaining to the occult. At the same time, if the Stuart abilities are only passed through the female line, then I should have inherited my powers from my mother, unless she belonged to another family. Unfortunately, the only memories I have of growing up were of her working herself to the bone to raise me, put a roof over my head and some food in my belly. All she'd done had been to sacrifice herself for my well-being, even when there was an alternative waiting for her in Fairydale. That only begs one question. What was she running from? Before I can change my mind, I open the cabinet, taking out a small blade. There is only one way to find out if what happened in my visions has any bearing on the present. Holding the blade between two fingers, I bring it to my forearm, cutting a straight line through my flesh. I grind my teeth in the face of the sudden pain, but I push it down as I stare at the blood pooling over the surface. If I'm wrong, I'm going to have quite the nasty wound. But if I'm right... Dropping the blade in the sink, I turn on the faucet and place my arm under the warm jet of water. The blood quickly washes away from my arm, leaving behind the ghost of a stinging pain and a medium gash. Just as I think that this was pointless and I'm going to bear the pain for a few more days, the gash starts to shrink. Right under my eyes, it becomes smaller and smaller until it simply disappears. My mouth hangs open in shock, and instinctively I reach for the blade, making another gash on my upper arm. The same thing happens. Bit by bit, the wound shrinks until it closes, almost as if the skin is mending itself at an accelerated rate. And though there is an initial pain as the blade pushes into my skin, by the end of the process, there is both no pain and no more injury. Cleansing the blood off myself, I turn off the faucet and brace my arms on the sink. All those times. It hadn't been Eamon who'd been healing me. It had been me all along. And that means... I slowly bring my eyes to the mirror, staring at my reflection and seeing both myself and Elizabeth. In my mind, there's already no more doubt that we are one and the same. Her feelings, my feelings, her experiences, my experiences. But if Elizabeth had Fiona to bind her powers and keep her safe, I have no one. If what Fiona had told her, me, about the mark is true, then it is a beacon for evil entities. For something like that monster. Though I've had this mark my entire life, it's only since stepping foot into Fairydale that I've gained this particular ability, and for the life of me, I cannot imagine when or how. Maybe the Hales can help me understand this better. I am more than certain that Rhiannon knows more than she's letting on. It's in the way she always regards me furtively, observing me for some unknown purpose. More than anything, it makes me wonder why I've seen so little of the Hales in the time I've been here. Caleb is always with me, yet they are rarely to be seen around. Granted, it is a giant house, but it seems ludicrous that days at a time would pass before we'd cross each other's paths. Almost as if they went out of their way to avoid me. Releasing a frustrated sigh, I take a towel off the wall, drying my arms as I go back to the room. There are too many things that are too odd for me to contemplate, just as there are too many unanswered questions. And if it weren't for these visions of the past, I would be even more in the dark. Yet the moment I think of the past, my mind unwittingly goes to Aemon and the fact that he's not a ghost. He's a demon, and potentially the one who wants to harm me, take advantage of my mark now that there's no spell containing it anymore. "You startled me!" I jump as I see Caleb lounging in my bed, a book in his hand. Peering above the pages of the book, he raises a brow at me. "I thought I locked the door." I frown.
"It was open."
He shrugs.
"I knocked."
Swinging his legs off the bed, he's before me in two strides.
"You forgot this yesterday."
He smirks as he places the book in my hands. The Monk. "Thank you," I murmur, my cheeks heating up as I recall the kiss.
"Is that all you have to say to me, darling, after you assaulted my lips?"
What? I sputter. "Assaulted your lips?"
"I heard about your incident in the catacombs. I wanted to see if you were all right."
He goes on to say, ignoring the previous topic. Circling me while looking me up and down, he nods quietly to himself.
"You seem fine. I'm glad."
"I am fine. It was just a little mishap. I didn't know the catacombs were off limits."
"Are they?"
He stops, his lips pulling into a hidden smile.
"Don't tell me. More ghosts?"
"No. Your father said there was a radioactive residue and it could be harmful to my health." He muses.
"I've never heard that before."
I whip my gaze to his, surprised to see he isn't joking. "What do you mean? He said they deposited uranium for the Second World War in the tunnels and it's still radioactive." I find it hard to believe Caleb wouldn't have heard about that, considering it would have been around 10 years ago, and he would have been a teenager around that time.
"Depositing uranium this far north? Wouldn't that have been counterproductive? It's far from Manhattan, and even further away from Los Alamos,"
he notes quietly. Before I can reply, though, he leans in to lay a kiss on my brow.
"I'll be away for a few days for business. My family will take care of you until I come back,"
he whispers against my skin.
"But remember one thing, Darcy, darling. There is no such thing as universal truth. Every story has different sides, and it's up to you to assemble them together to get the final picture."
And with that, he is gone. I bring my hands to my cheeks, massaging them in an attempt to recover from the little kiss he'd given me. One small touch and I'd flushed from head to toe. Yet even as his presence clouds my judgment, his words still ring in my ears.
"There's no such thing as universal truth."
Does he mean I shouldn't wholly trust his family? But doesn't that extend to him, too? More confused than before, I go about my day as I try to make sense of all the information I have. Pulling out a small diary, I start jotting down everything that had happened to me since arriving in Fairydale, as well as writing a chart of all the people I'd met and each specific interaction. I already know there are seemingly two factions in this town. The Hales are on one side, alone in their big manor, but seemingly respected enough in town despite some of the rumors surrounding them. Then there's Mr. Nicholson, with the Pierces and Mr. Vaughn. From what I've been able to glean, Mr. Nicholson is the authority in this town, and is considered the voice of reason. As he'd promised me, he'd put in a good word with the townsfolk, and suddenly any insults at my address have stopped. The police, too, had stopped inquiring into my whereabouts, and I haven't been asked again to testify in the murder cases. Drawing a diagram to map out the connections, I frown as a sudden question enters my mind. Mr. Nicholson had said the Pierces are distant relatives of his. He'd also been the only one to admit to knowing who my mother was. Could it be that she's related to him in some way? Alternatively, could that mean he is related to the Stuarts in some way? Caleb had already confirmed that Rhiannon is involved in witchcraft. That makes me wonder if they aren't somehow involved with the six families Fiona had talked to me about. And if my reasoning is right, then why would two families make their home in a remote place like Fairydale? Placing my pen down, I massage my temples. No matter how much I think about this, it's quite clear that there are severe gaps in my knowledge that prevent me from reaching any conclusion, or at least any reasonable conclusion. There's also the most important question. How does Eamon figure into all of this? Is he a friend or foe? Is he after my mark, or is he trying to protect me? Centuries ago, I loved him, and if I'm honest with myself, I still do. I just don't know whom to trust anymore. When it's time for dinner, I put on one of my nicer dresses and head to the main dining room. The family is already present when I arrive. Rhiannon is at the head of the table. Connor is by her right side, accompanied by his wife and Katrina. And when they notice me, Rhiannon asks me to take a seat next to her on the left side. Thank you for the invite. I give them a polite smile as I take a seat. Two servants bring the first course, laying a plate in front of each of us.
You'll have to forgive us that we only invited you now to dine with us. Somehow, it's so hard to coordinate a time when we are all available.
Rhiannon starts. It's all right. You've already welcomed me into your home, which is more than enough.
Nonsense. I've always prided myself on being a good host. We've just had more problems than usual this time around.
She says ominously as she meets her son's gaze.
But things will soon go back to normal.
Darcy should understand. She's already met some of the resident ghosts.
You did?
Rhiannon turns to me.
Which one? Was it Lydia? I keep hoping she will appear.
You mean Lydia Hale? Rhiannon nods.
My grandmother died some 50 years ago, but I doubt she's moved on.
She pauses.
I don't think any of them will until they find a resolution.
All the while, I can't help but note how nonchalant they are talking about ghosts at the dinner table. I do my best to seem just as unbothered, though the questions are piling in my mind. What resolution?
They've all been waiting for something.
She smiles.
Soon, though, they will finally be able to find peace.
Caleb told me about this house. I start, and suddenly everyone stops to look at me expectantly. That you have wards in place to keep evil out, I amend.
Caleb told you that?
Connor asks, frowning. I nod.
Is it true that you are a witch?
I lower my voice, almost ashamed of saying it out loud. Rhiannon cracks a smile before she bursts out into laughter.
Witch!
She chuckles, and the others join in.
That is an antiquated term, my dear. I prefer guardian of light.
Guardian of light. Coven of light. The terms are eerily similar and lead me to believe that I was right in my assumption. The Hales are part of the six families. That means good magic, no? I measure my words, thinking back to what Caleb had told me. I am already at a disadvantage that I am an outsider in this town, having close to no knowledge of what truly happens here. The last thing I want to do is give away the fact that I can see my past life as Elizabeth. That is my only trump card so far.
Of course, she exclaims. My family has been a protector of mankind for centuries. All the women take an oath to serve the light.
She gives me a short account, telling me that all women in the family are born with gifts that allow them to fight against evil. All the information matches what Fiona had told me, making me even more certain that they are part of the six families.
You are taking this awfully well, Darcy,
Tomasa notes.
I know I reacted quite poorly when I first found out about it.
I think I would have reacted worse had I not experienced these odd encounters myself, I admit. Yet there's also the fact that the moment I'd obtained the information, instead of resorting to disbelief, I'd only felt a great calm settling over me as all the pieces fit in place. I have to wonder if this isn't a result of being intimately acquainted with magic in my previous life, too, and thus being primed for accepting its existence. Or maybe it's the fact that I know I have similar abilities and magic running through my own blood. Nonetheless, now looking back, I cannot see the world as anything else but full of magic. Everyone is quiet as the meal continues, and I cannot help but ask some of my most burning questions. Leo Pierce's death. I look around the table, gauging their expressions. It was magic, wasn't it? The tension vibrates at the table, but eventually Rhiannon responds.
It was an evil energy unlike any I've ever seen, she states emphatically. Whatever his sins, he didn't deserve to die that way.
What about the other murders? They all nod grimly. But why? Do you know why? Just at that moment, the servants descend again upon the dining room, taking away the plates and bringing the next course. As I'm about to reiterate my question, Rhiannon suddenly changes the subject.
I hope that despite the odd things you've witnessed so far, you will enjoy yourself in our little town. There's a celebration coming soon for the Fairy Festival, and at the end of October I'll be holding an important event. We'll have guests from all over the world, she says enthusiastically.
From all over the world? Immediately my thoughts go to the other families. Could it be them? But if that is the case, then... My eyes meet Rhiannon's, and in there I note the worry, the anguish, and most of all, the determination. If all six families are reuniting in Fairydale, it can only be for one reason. To perform one of the forbidden spells. Caleb's absence is marked. Even though it's been just a day, I have to admit that I miss him and our discussions. I've gotten too used to having him daily with me, entertaining and challenging me with his conversation. Without him, I feel bereft. After a relatively fulfilling sleep, I wake up early in the morning and head to the conservatory to meet with Rhiannon, hoping that a meeting just between the two of us would bring me more answers. As I step into the brightly lit area, I note flower beds on both sides. Rhiannon is on her knees, digging in the corner. Remembering she is in her late 90s, I cannot help but admire her. Let me help, I say as I lower myself to my knees by her side.
Bah.
She gently stops my hand.
I might be getting old, but I can still do this.
For the next few minutes, I watch as she carefully plants a new rosebud in the ground. When she's done, she asks me to join her on a bench in the back. The conservatory is made entirely out of glass, allowing for the sun rays to infiltrate every little corner. You said you wanted to talk to me about something? I tell her as she pulls close a mobile table that has a teapot and two cups on it.
Indeed. She smiles. Let us have tea first.
She pours a cup for each of us.
It's rose tea. I make it myself.
she adds with pride as she gazes around at the varieties of roses she has in her greenhouse. I can tell this is a favorite pastime, and she takes great pride in her flowers.
It's wonderful. Thank you.
We're both silent for a moment, a bird crying in the distance, the only sound around.
This conservatory was built by Lydia's mother, my great-grandmother. I never met her, but I'm told she loved her little plants and would spend most of her time here with her husband.
I nod slowly, curious to see where she's going with this information. Instead of revealing what little I know, it's better to see what she has to offer first.
She died during the plague when Lydia was a little girl. Despite everything, my grandmother still remembered her and would often tell me little stories about her.
She smiles fondly. I bring the cup to my lips, studying her covertly. Just like the other Hales, she has dark hair and a pale complexion with lightly colored eyes. Lines mar her forehead and cheeks, but they are not as pronounced as you would expect of a 90-something-year-old woman. I'd been serious when I told Caleb she comes across as someone in her 50s, which in itself is a feat. Rhiannon takes a deep breath.
My grandmother had the gift of foresight.
She turns to me.
From the time I was born, she told me about one recurring vision she kept having, one that haunted her all her life.
I tilt my head, meeting her gaze. What was it? She gives me a sad smile.
There's evil here, Darcy. So much evil, the town overflows with it. I'm sure you've already heard the rumors about the criminals in Fairydale.
I nod.
Nothing is accidental. They're drawn to the evil here. It attracts them like a moth to a flame. We've tried to stay as vigilant as possible, but in the last few years, it's been worse and worse. Murderers, rapists, arsonists, the worst of the worst. And all of them gather here.
What evil are you talking about?
An entity that's been here for centuries.
She answers vaguely.
Something that grows stronger every day until we won't be able to contain it anymore.
I don't understand. I frown.
You will.
She covers my hand with hers.
You see, my grandmother predicted that there will be one person who will help us rid the world of this evil. Someone who will be born with the sole destiny of eradicating it.
Who? I ask in a breathless whisper.
The one with the mark of light,
she says, waving her hand in front of me, an image appearing as if projected by a machine. I startle, jumping in my seat. Her other hand holds me in place.
Don't be scared,
she murmurs.
Look.
She points to the image she is creating. After the first traces of shock wear off, I realize what I'm looking at. It's a similar drawing to the one I'd seen in Codex Stuartorum. It's the body of a woman with a tear-shaped mark above her left breast. What is so special about that mark? I swallow hard. Going by Rhiannon's expression as she regards me, she knows fully well I have the mark.
No one can say for sure. The elders claimed it was of divine origins, but all agreed that it holds immense powers.
She pauses, and the image shifts.
Historically, only two other people have had this mark, and both died gruesome deaths.
That gives me pause. I know about the first one, allegedly killed by Aemon. But what about me? What about Elizabeth? What happened to them? My heart is in my throat as she explains the same I'd heard from Fiona about the first woman. But when it comes to Elizabeth...
The second one.
Rhiannon's voice trembles.
He removed her heart in an attempt to get to the core of her power. It was useless, because her powers had been bound since birth. But she died a horrible death.
She shakes her head. He, I repeat, a ghost of a whisper as my chest constricts with the visions of the past, of the only person who could have done that. Rhiannon brings the back of her hand to her cheek, wiping a tear away.
You asked about the source of the evil in Fairydale.
She sighs, and with a flick of her wrist, the image changes to another illustration I'm well acquainted with.
He seduced Elizabeth, and corrupted her mind until he turned her against her own family and everything that was good. Until he...
She gulps down, the story affecting her more than I would have thought.
He killed her without remorse.
Rhiannon snaps her fingers, and the illustrations come to life before me. Aemon, with his long pale hair and intense gaze, with his honeyed words and searing touches, she's talking about my Aemon.
His last known name is Aemon,
Rhiannon starts.
The elders believe him to be an archdemon, though we've never been able to find out more. The only one who knew anything was Elizabeth, but she protected him until he killed her with his bare hands.
A vision of Aemon takes shape in my mind. He's standing in front of me, his hand turning into a blade and thrusting it into my chest. I'd seen him do that before, when he'd killed that man. He'd removed his heart and crushed it in his fist. Yet thinking about him doing that to me... A shiver goes down my back. If what Rhiannon's saying is true, then... This... Aemon. I clear my throat, my voice groggy as I say his name out loud. That one word is enough to make my chest ache with longing, the love I bore him, that I still do, pushing its head to the surface and hurting me with the implications of his treachery. What happened to him? Where is he now?
Everywhere.
She takes a deep breath.
After he killed Elizabeth, the elders managed to contain him in Fairydale, and he's been here for centuries. But his seal is weakening. Soon, he will either go free, or we'll be able to kill him once and for all.
How do you plan on killing him? The mere suggestion that anyone might harm Aemon hits me like a bullet to the chest, a deep chasm opening inside my heart. Squeezing my eyes shut against that sensation, I try to pay attention to what Rhiannon is saying.
There is one spell, the same one they used a few centuries ago.
But it didn't kill him back then, I interject, keeping my tone down so she doesn't detect the residual happiness.
This time it will be amplified,
she continues, giving me a knowing look. By the mark. I fill in the gap. She nods.
Yes, that is what my grandmother foresaw. The one with the mark will end everything once and for all.
She pauses as she gazes intently at me.
You, Darcy.
As expected, she knows. Probably knew from the beginning. Does Caleb know, too?
We need your help, child. We've been waiting for you for so long. For too long.
She sighs. I simply stare at her. You're asking me to... to risk my life. I mumble incoherently, unable to wrap my mind around any of this. Not only did I hear that Aemon had killed me before, despite all of his avowals of eternal love, but now I find out that I am the only one who can kill him, that they need me to perform this spell. Even if he were the devil himself, I don't know how I could possibly do anything to harm him. How could I, when I'd seen how inconsolable I'd been in the past when I'd thought him lost to me? How could I possibly do anything to him when killing him would be akin to killing my own heart?
I know this might seem too sudden. I honestly did not know how to break it to you. We wanted to let you get accustomed to Fairydale on your own, so you could see the odd things that happen here. Only by experiencing it for yourself could you ever believe what I'm saying is true. Isn't that right?
I give her a slow nod. A small tremor goes down my body, despite all my best efforts to control myself. It's in vain. Conflicting emotions, love, fear, disappointment, converge inside my heart, making me reel with the magnitude of my feelings. And despite Rhiannon's explanations, I feel more lost than ever.
You see, you are our only remaining hope. His influence is already seeping through the seal, and I can feel the evil shrouding this entire town.
She laments, giving me gruesome details of the murders that have occurred in Fairydale, not only the ones I'd witnessed, but also the ones from the past.
Every year it becomes worse. But now...
She trails off, sighing loudly. I nod. How do you know I have the mark? I inquire softly. Without taking her eyes off me, she changes the image, showing me a sketch.
Lydia didn't just foresee your arrival. She foresaw everything about you. She knew when you would be born, how you'd look, everything.
Then my mother... Did you know my mother? A shadow falls over her face as she blinks.
I did,
she replies.
She was a great woman.
There was a tightness to her voice as she continues.
She thought she was doing what was best for you by taking you away from here, but she didn't realize that she couldn't fight fate.
What can you tell me about her? She shakes her head sadly.
Everyone loved her in Fairydale. It's unfortunate that she didn't think she could share her burden with us.
Realizing I'm not likely to get more out of her, I decide to change the subject, inquiring about the monster I'd seen instead.
Is it this?
Her brows furrow with concentration as she brings to life another illustration. This time it's of a creature that looks just like the monster who'd attacked me. Yes, I nod. He had huge claws, and he stabbed me, and...
Did he get your blood?
She all but shrieks. I blink in confusion, my mouth opening and closing as I try to find my voice.
Forgive me, but it's very important to know if he took your blood or not.
He tried to, but he was killed before he could do it. She releases a deep sigh.
Good. Good.
She nods to herself.
You cannot let any such creature take a drop of blood from you, Darcy. Listen to me. It's imperative that they don't get their hands on your blood.
Why?
This monster. It's a Kiaka, a mindless, lowly demon that does the bidding of its master. Since Aemon cannot act for himself, he must have sent it after you. You see... Your blood is the only thing that can give him strength.
I regard her carefully. It had been Aemon himself who'd killed the monster. Why would he do it if he'd sent it in the first place? Unless... My pulse speeds up, my palms getting clammy as it dawns on me he has been playing with me from the beginning. He killed the Kiaka purposefully after he'd gotten my blood... He must have done it to get me to trust him. Just as he must have been behind every little odd thing happening around me. Remembering all the times I thought I was losing my mind, I can't help but wonder if he'd been behind that. Could it be that he'd been trying to undermine my relationship with Caleb, too? Just how strong is Aemon? I utter in a whisper.
I don't have an answer for you, child. When the elders sealed him, they gave their lives to that spell. It was a sacrifice they were willing to make, but no one realized he would be that powerful. Though he is trapped, for now, his influence lingers.
Do you think... I wet my lips. Do you think he could influence my mind? Dear God, but what if those visions of the past I'm seeing are sent by Aemon? What if he's trying to paint our relationship in a positive light so he can get me on his side? She nods grimly. My eyes widen just as my mind blanks on me. Turning towards the beautiful roses, I stare at my empty space as I realize I've reached my lowest point, where I cannot even know if my thoughts are my own, never mind my memories of the past, or if my eyes deceive me.
I can help with that, she suddenly offers.
Closing her eyes, she does a small incantation, her palms lighting up in a blinding flash before a red string appears in her hand.
Here, she murmurs as she wraps it around my wrist. This should be enough for now, since he's still weak. But if he gains strength, there's no telling what he will be capable of.
She takes a deep breath.
You must ensure he never gets even one drop of your blood. If he does, I fear for the fate of this town.
I give her a tight smile, promising I will be careful. All the while, though, I cannot reconcile what Rhiannon is telling me with what I know of Aemon. Just like in my vision before, when Fiona had told me how evil he was, there's a part of me that cannot believe it, that simply cannot fathom an existence without him. Even then, I knew he was a demon. I knew he was reviled. I knew he was a murderer. And yet, I still loved him. But can I trust myself? Can I truly trust that what I'm feeling is real and not a result of his interference? He might not have the power to become corporeal and come after me himself, but as Rhiannon admitted, he could affect my perception of what's happening around me. Despite knowing all that, I'm still torn. As we finish the tea, she tells me she must retire for the day.
You must be wondering why I've been so absent.
She stops at the door of the conservatory on her way out.
I have been performing a containment ritual every day to ensure that Aemon's influence does not reach this house. I will continue to do so until the moment comes that we'll finally be able to rid ourselves of him.
What will happen to me for the final spell? You said I'm needed to enhance it, but will I... die? I ask tentatively. She purses her lips, her cheeks tightening in a sad smile.
Your abilities will save you from such a fate, Darcy,
she vaguely replies. But she never gives me a straight answer. We walk together back to the house, parting ways as we reach the first floor.
Please consider what I told you, Darcy.
She makes to continue to the stairs when I ask one last question. If I don't agree, will you do the spell anyway? She takes a small moment to reply, nodding grimly.
It must be done. Whether we live or die, it is our duty to cleanse the stench of evil from this town once and for all.
And with that, she's gone. I hurry to my room, all the while mulling over everything I've learned. To say I'm shocked that she'd been so frank with me is an understatement. From the beginning, the Hales have been somehow secretive as to what goes on in Fairydale, and Katrina had been quite dismissive of the rumors about the family. Yet Rhiannon had confirmed everything. The Hales are part of the six families, and they think I can somehow help them defeat an archdemon that's been terrorizing Fairydale for centuries. It would all be perfectly fine, if not for the small fact that the archdemon in question is Aemon, my beloved, and apparently my killer. There are too many contradictions, and though I can feel that Rhiannon does not have any ill intentions toward me, I am still wary of trusting her. Just how much is true and how much is fake? How is it that I come to Fairydale to receive an inheritance from a not-so-dead man, but instead find myself in the middle of a conflict between witches and demons? But most importantly,
How do I manage to stay alive?
Chapter 16. 2 days later, Caleb is still not back. Since my talk with Rhiannon, I've been all by myself, either in my room or in the library, reading. I've seen Katrina in passing, but she commutes to school outside of Fairydale every day, so she leaves in the morning and comes back late in the afternoon. Boredom soon pokes its head to the surface, especially as my frustration mounts at the half-truths and the incomplete information I have. After Rhiannon had told me about Aemon and the fact that the six families need me to kill him off for good, I found myself going down the rabbit hole of overthinking everything. I'd jotted down all I know in my notebook as I tried to make sense of it, and though Rhiannon had revealed to me more than I would have thought she would, there are still glaring discrepancies. There is the past as I know it, as I've seen it through my eyes. Then there's the version that has made it to the history books. And while I am aware that Aemon's influence could interfere with my perception of the past, I can't help but feel that my memories are real, that everything I'd seen of the past was what Elizabeth had lived through. Otherwise, why reveal everything Fiona had told me? Why would Aemon show himself to me as the bloodthirsty demon that he is instead of the sweet lover he'd been up until that point? Yet that's not the only doubt I have regarding what I'd learned. Rhiannon had all